Season 3 has just come to a close, so let's take a look back at the wonderful, generous guests, the beautiful insights, and the meaning that was made over this last season. Hey y'all, I'm Reese, and welcome to Making Meaning. Making Meaning is a podcast by the Cohere Collective that helps you make meaning in a way that makes sense for you. This week, I am bringing you a bonus episode for a little look back on all of the beautiful things that we learned over the last few months during season 3. A few housekeeping things before we get started. Making Meaning is going to go on a brief break in between seasons before season 4 hits the airwaves, just to make sure that I have a couple episodes in the tank with some really good, exciting guests. There are a few already that are coming your way that I am so excited to share with you. There may be a few bonus episodes between now and then, depending on how the inspiration strikes me, but no formal episodes of Making Meaning. I haven't decided the exact release date of season 4. I want to make sure I have a few episodes of really juicy guests lined up for y'all before I do so, but hopefully by the time this is coming out, I will have that release date set, and if so, it will be in the show notes or episode description wherever you are listening or watching. And subscribe wherever you are listening or watching so you don't miss the season 4 premiere and a whole new host of wonderful guests that we will get to make meaning alongside. Also, if you are new here, welcome. This is the Cohere Collective. If you are confused and you're like, what the hell is the Cohere Collective? Our website will be linked in the video description or show notes as well. And there you will be able to find a whole host of things, from our story to our beliefs and our vision, as well as offerings that we have and other content, including past episodes of Making Meaning and plenty of other really cool podcasts and fun things too. So check it out, get into it, and be a part of the collective. Okay. Let's dive right in, y'all. I am so excited to look back on this season. Every season of Making Meaning, I feel like we just elevate and up-level and continue to get better from just like my straight editing and like audio knowledge capabilities. I'm sure that the quality of the show sounds better, even though of course it's not perfect. I'm still learning. But also in the conversations that we're having, I think my interviewing skills have continued to improve. Again, also not perfect, but it's just cool to look back and kind of have these as a memory of how we have, as a collective, grown. These are, yes, living, breathing examples of making meaning, but also time capsules of the meaning that was made, right? And that's why I like doing these look back episodes and why I like reflecting on it. Because I think not only is it important to be doing the learning and growing and stretching, it's also important to do the reflecting and the processing and the integrating. You know, if you're not giving yourself time to really digest the information, you're going to get a cramp when you go into the ocean. You know, you're going to get an intellectual, mental cramp, Charlie horse. And no one wants that. So this is, I suppose, the 30-minute wait period before season 4 comes out. Our first episode of season 3 was with one of my dear friends, Tommy Oakley. And this episode was so fun. I had the most lovely conversation with Tommy before the mics were even on at a party at some point. I forget what party it was. We were just sitting and talking, and he was asking me questions about the podcast, and he's like, oh, that's really cool, and you do this, and how do you find guests for the podcast? And I kind of talked to him about the process behind that, and he was like, oh, that's interesting. I know you've recorded some friends before. How do you decide like when you would want to record like a friend as opposed to like an author or something? And I was like, Tommy, do you want to be a guest on the podcast? Is that what you're getting at? And he was like, I don't want to presume. I don't want to invite myself. And I'm like, no. You are not inviting yourself. This is me inviting you. I would love to have a conversation with you on the podcast. And I think oftentimes, like truly, the invitation is open to pretty much everyone in my life. So if you're someone in my life and you're listening and you haven't been invited on the podcast, I hope you know that is not any indication that I don't want you on the podcast. It is just, I haven't said it verbally because I do want you on the podcast. I want everyone in my life to come on the podcast. The reason why I don't always lead with that super forcefully is because I don't want anyone to feel pressured. I know that one, not everyone thinks about these things in this way and necessarily wants to be having these conversations. And while that is a bit disappointing, I never want to pressure someone into, you know, thinking about the meaning of life when they maybe don't want to, because that's a deeply personal thing. But also, some people just don't want to be recorded. They don't want their thoughts on the internet, and maybe they're not comfortable even talking about them with me. So I never want to pressure people into it or make people feel awkward and have to say no to me, even though I would want people to say no if they don't want to do it, you know, and that wouldn't hurt my feelings. But all that to say, this was just so much fun to sit down and talk with Tommy. And it was just so flattering that he wanted to be a part of the podcast and that we were able to do it. And I learned so much about him. One thing that I really gained from this episode was his, even though he's religious, he's kind of Catholic in the sense that a lot of people are Catholic. That's like, well, yeah, I'm Catholic. Sure, I believe in God. But you know, it's like, what does that really mean? But that he really views it as this kind of tool for understanding the other things about life that he's really passionate about. And one of those is mental health. And I did not realize that that was something that Tommy was so passionate about. And I am too. You know, if you've watched any other content, you've probably heard me be pretty open about my experience with anxiety and OCD and medication and my journey through therapy that I'm still in. These are very much important facets of my life and the way I make meaning. And so to be able to go there and learn that about him was just so beautiful and really a reminder of why I continue doing this for me personally, right? That it's like, it really isn't just about sharing this message with other people. It's also about me growing. And it's like such a good excuse to have meaningful conversations. And making meaning was always about wanting to do the thing while talking about the thing, in the sense that the way I make meaning in my life is by having important conversations with people I love. Like, church for me is a good 3-hour long dinner and a bottle of wine between two people and the conversation that arises. Like, that is holy communion. And to be able to make meaning in that way and just pop a microphone in front of it, it's like, it's me making meaning while talking about making meaning. And I think this episode is a really beautiful example of that. And I so enjoyed it. Thank you, Tommy, for coming on and for being vulnerable and open and bold enough to be curious with me about wanting to come on the podcast. Season 2, I had on Annie Sclaver Orenstein, who is the author of Always a Sibling. And in her book, she tells the story of losing her oldest brother, who was in the military and died when he was in combat. And as someone who has a fraught relationship with my, I only have one sibling, my older brother, though, we share that it's an older brother. It was so powerful for me to think about the ways in which siblinghood is just a powerful thing, right? Whether you're close with your siblings or not, they are a mirror to your experience because they are the only other people that are kind of growing in real time next to you in the same environment. Of course, you're going to grow in different ways and you're going to internalize and process the way that you're raised and the way that you grow up and your family dynamics and systems all differently. Those are going to impact you differently. But they serve as that benchmark, that test the meter stick to kind of measure yourself up against, because they've always been there, especially if you're the younger sibling, right? I have never known a world without my brother in it. And we grew very similarly, side by side. And the idea of losing that, even if it's someone you're not close to — Annie was close to her brother, but even if it's someone you're not close to — comes with a whole host of grief that isn't just — I mean, not to undermine any of the grief of losing someone you love in your family, but there's also the grief of losing this measuring point, right? It's almost like stripping away a support for growth that you never even knew that you had until it was gone. And I'm really glad that I had this conversation, because I think not only did we get to dive into a lot about grief and what grief is — and grief is such a big part of making meaning because it is inherent in change — but it also helped me kind of think about and work through some of my siblings' stuff. But to personally process this kind of alongside Annie in a lot of ways, and really think about the ways that this would hit you differently. You know, there is the grief of losing someone you love, but there's also the like guilt-ridden grief of relief that comes sometimes when certain people do pass away. I think that's something, if we're not firsthand familiar with, that we've certainly seen in media, society, or other people go through. And that is such a hard, complex, nuanced relationship to grief that is, I'm sad and I miss this person, but also it's easier now that they're gone too. And how do we hold all of those things? It's deeply human, and we must. We gotta hold it. And therefore, I think we should be talking about it. So a big thank you to Annie. And her book will be linked down in the video description and the show notes. Episode 3 was with Sneha Patel, who is a dear friend of mine as well, and she is a functional medicine health coach, and we talked about why she really went into functional medicine. A lot of the times when I have experts on the show, I do want to talk about the thing that they're an expert about that is important to me, but also I'm like, any other interview show talks to these people about what they're experts about. The thing that I'm interested in is, why is this the thing that they want to be an expert about? Why is this the thing that they've chosen to make meaning with? What is it about functional medicine and holistic health that lit Sneha's soul on fire? And that's very much what we dug into. And the path that she found to pursuing purpose was rooted in her own healing, in healing her own nervous system, which of course is related to both the physical body, but also the immaterial mind and how those two interact, which is a much deeper philosophical conversation. But, right, if we kind of privilege the idea that these do interact, that through her own process of healing, she was able to find the thing that made her want to chase purpose, right? It was the ding on the compass of purpose that was like, oh, that's the direction. And I just think that that's so beautiful. And I really like this phrase that I came up with. It was trusting your gut to heal your gut, right? Because holistic health, we know, is all about healing the gut right now, and leaky gut and all sorts of stuff. But a really wonderful episode. So thank you, Sneha, for coming on. Episode 4 was with author and activist Leah Rampe, and we discussed her book, Earth and Soul. Of course, that book will be linked down below as well. Any books that are mentioned will be linked down below in the episode description, show notes, wherever you are listening or watching. So just preface for all authors and things moving forward. I'll try and tag everyone below as well, but because there are word counts on certain things, I may not be able to. So I'll certainly link just a link to the show as a whole, so you can go find the specific episode and find these people if you're curious about them and their work. But Leah Rampe, Not only was this episode so powerful to me because I am passionate about climate change and, you know, what is our duty to the world as we operate with it and as we eventually leave it. How do we leave it better than we found it? And how do we exist in communion with it, not in tension with it? And the thing about Leah's work in relationship to this that was just so striking was the space that she holds for grief. Because not only are we thinking about the things that we owe to our broader community that is other people, but also the environment and nature, what do we owe to the other living beings that we cohabitate with, but also what we are owed and the things that we were not given, right? There is not a lot that one person can control, and that's why our collective voices are so important, especially when it comes to activism and justice work. And a lot of the time when it's like, I'm so powerless, like I, Reese Brown, cannot solve climate change. Like that's just a fact. And that comes with some grief. It comes with some grief that I can't tell these, you know, oil and gas CEOs and billionaires to stop. It comes with some grief that they don't care, or at least don't see it in the same way I do. And I'm using very unspecific and unnuanced language here, and I hope you'll give me grace on that, because there's already a whole episode of the podcast where we discuss these things to go into the details on that. But I do want to highlight here that holding space for the grief that's associated with activism, I think, is really powerful and is something that we should do more of. I think we should be able to hold all sorts of feelings with justice work. Yes, grief, but also joy and connection, right? Like, we do this in community, and there's something really beautiful about that, that we can still find good to come out of needing to do these things. Obviously, the silver lining does not justify the storm cloud, but I think keeping our eyes open to the complexity of any experience is just powerful and reminds me of the complexity of the human experience and everything, right? I'm a broken record about that, aren't I? But I hope for good reason. I think for good reason, and I hope you think for good reason too. Thank you, Leah, for sharing your work and for your episode. Next episode was with Nicole Pignatello, who I met through life coach training. And what a lovely human. She is just like a sunshiny, wonderful, wonderful human. And in her episode, we talked all about joy. And I really loved the way that she discussed joy as presence, right? That like joy in and of itself is not really, like joy in and of itself, it can't exist in isolation. It is only something that arises in the midst of doing other things. And I think that that's a really cool way of thinking about joy. And I think with these concepts of joy, happiness, we get into a complicated kind of feeling of like, why not just choose joy? Why not just choose to be happy? Why not just choose these emotions and feelings? And yes, I do think there is something to the psychological power of saying like, I'm going to be happy today, you know, and kind of choosing to take that path. But there's another empowerment to the, I don't need to choose what state I'm going to be in. I just need to choose to be present with that state. And in the releasing of expectations and in embracing ease, the joy comes, the feelings come without having to white knuckle your way through it. So I really enjoyed this episode, and thank you, Nicole. Next episode is also a life coaching friend, Marcy Rossi, and this was an unexpected episode for me. I was not intending for this episode to turn into the expose on the alcohol industry that it was, but we just started talking about it, and I was so deeply fascinated that I was like, we need to go down this road. And hearing Marcy's experience with alcohol and how, you know, dependence and alcoholism are very different, and we all have a relationship to alcohol, regardless of whether it's like your relationship is in that you don't have a relationship with it, or you know, like no contact is still a form of relationship, right? Or in that it's a part of your life, and there's a whole spectrum of ways that we can engage with alcohol and other substances. And it's something that I think I, at least before this episode, wasn't not engaging with mindfully. Like, it was something that I was trying to be very intentional about in my life. But I realized that I didn't really have the tools to be intentional about it, because it's just not talked about. And especially as you get older and you go to college and you start drinking, and yeah, there's these competing narratives of like drink to be cool, but also like now there is the movement of like being sober in dry Januarys being more and more accessible and normalized, which I think is a good thing. But we're not really equipped with tools for managing our emotional relationship to this thing beyond, you know, layer in a glass of water in between every drink. And not to say that it's evil to go to a party and get drunk. I don't think it's evil, and I don't think it's an expression of self-hatred either. I actually think that it can be quite fun. But I do think that that should be an act of choice when you're doing it, not one that you should just fall into. And talking with Marcy about these things, and also the way that like capitalism definitely plays a part in our relationship to alcohol, as it seems to in everything. The more and more that I talk with people, the more and more you see the threads of how our economic system really does impact our all areas of our life. But this really not only made me question my relationship to the intentionality of a relationship with alcohol, but also gave me some tools to really think about it as well. And I hope it did the same for you. So thank you, Marcy. Next episode was Santana Ennis. And y'all, I love this episode. It is such a good episode. And I keep quoting recently, especially something that Santana said in this episode, which is, dehumanization anywhere is a threat to humanity everywhere. And I think that this is such an easy thing to say and such a hard pill to swallow, but it is so important. The thing that I keep coming back to with activism, with speaking truth to power, with bringing space to power, is that we cannot sacrifice our ethics based on someone else's actions. What I mean by that is, we cannot step out of love because someone else is choosing to act outside of love. Actually, someone else acting outside of love is a call for us to step into love even harder, to go hard in the paint of love, right? And it's hard, because when people in power are wielding that power dangerously, abusively, atrociously, it makes you angry. And it makes me want to hate those people. It does. It makes me want to hate people that are acting out of such hate for other people. And then I think back to what Santana said. And it reminds me that if I step into hate for those people, I devolve into being them too. This is not an excuse for actions or behavior that are deeply harmful, hurtful, and inhumane. It is a call for our response to be one that is better. And I hate it because it sounds like the, well, you need to be the bigger person that so many of us have heard. And that is not a fun thing to hear. But I actually don't think it's about calling yourself to be a bigger person in these situations. I think it's about calling yourself to be the wholest version of yourself. So I guess maybe in that way it is a little bit a bigger person, but bigger in relationship to yourself, not in relationship to anyone else. When you are acting out of your wholest, truest, most you, the most I am part of you, how do you want to engage with those people? And I think when we meet hate with that level of grounded love, fortified love, unshakable love, it does call them to step into love themselves. I do believe that. So I really want to thank Santana for the gift that she gave me in this episode and the conversation that we had. That one's really stuck with me and it will continue to. So get used to hearing that if you're not already. I said it on the episode of Making Meaning that I did with my parents that was the season finale of season 3. I also have said it a few times in a few Our Daily Ritual episodes. So this probably isn't the first time you've heard it, and it certainly won't be the last. Thank you, Santana, for this conversation and your wisdom. Next, we had Caitlin Andre, and this episode also took me by surprise. A theme that really arose in this season was grief and how grief is really a part of just about every facet of the human experience, because fundamental to being human is change, and fundamental to change is grief. As things evolve and grow, necessarily, that means we are losing something, right? It doesn't mean that that's bad, right? Like, grief doesn't have to be painful. That's not exactly what I want to say there. Grief in and of itself isn't a bad thing. It does hurt. It can be painful. But it's a way of acknowledging our growth too, because sometimes we don't even realize how far we've come. One thing that happened to me the other day, I've been in Italian language classes since I've been here in Florence, and every day in my Italian language class, it's like, I am not getting any better. This is still so hard. I'm still translating to English in my brain. I'm not good at this. But then I went to the grocery store. Was this yesterday? This was just yesterday. And the cashier, who's kind of one of the regular workers there, just in passing said, your Italian's gotten so much better. And it kind of floored me in that I'm like, has it? It doesn't feel that way to me because I'm stuck with it every day. I'm in the slog of 3 hours of Italian classes every day. And I don't feel how I'm getting better. And grief lets us know that we are changing and that we are growing. And I think it also calls us to take time and space to take care of ourselves. And that is exactly where Caitlin and I went in this conversation, that grief is a call for love. I think it's Helen Keller that said grief is simply love with no place to go, right? When you lose something, all of the feelings you had towards it now don't have a place to land. And so it kind of feels like reaching out your arm for something that doesn't have anything to grab a hold of, hold on to anymore. And this really invites us to pause, to slow down in the midst of change. It's like when you're going so fast that your body kind of makes you sick and you get a cold and it's like, oh, okay, I did way too much and now I'm gonna be in bed all weekend. Okay, body, I hear you. Grief feels similar to me, not in that it's kind of this like body's punishment for doing too much kind of thing, but in that it's like, oh, yeah, I do need to slow down, don't I? And I think Caitlin's expression of this, specifically from her point of view of being a mom and the guilt that mothers are really fighting against, that society kind of thrusts upon mothers, but mothers also, I think, to no fault of their own, oftentimes give themselves over focusing on themselves. It's like any sense of free time that you may have must be spent in pouring back into your kids, into your family. And the idea that a mom would do anything for herself is like automatically deemed selfish. And Caitlin saying that she would take a day off to just go watch a movie by herself and still like send the kids to daycare, I think is really powerful and a reminder along this spectrum of experiences of like, what does motherhood mean? And we really need to be thinking about the messaging that we're sending to moms and the messages that are being internalized. And if anyone out there is a mom or is considering becoming a mom, the way that we need to be thinking about those things very carefully and the relationship you want to have to motherhood, whether or not you are a mom. And especially if you're the partner of a mom, what that means for you. And as a child to a mom, like it made me think about all the things that my mom didn't do. Not that she didn't do everything that she is capable of and wanted to do, but just in the sense of sacrifices, right? There's so much inherent sacrifice in motherhood. You should not sacrifice the whole of the self just to be a mom. That's a tragedy, I think. So thank you, Caitlin, for making us think about this important dimension of motherhood and the grief that exists in relationship to motherhood and the importance of resilience and how grief can actually help us build muscles of self-love. Next episode, I talked with author Jessica Fine, and we are back in this theme of grief. Until this moment, actually, I wasn't really realizing how much grief really came up a lot in this season. But I think it makes so much sense. As kind of a global society, we are moving through a lot of rapid change. Both for good and for bad, right? And again, to speak back to what I was just saying about Caitlin's episode, grief is a call to slow down and take care of ourselves in the midst of change. And also in this relationship to motherhood, Jessica lost a daughter. She lost a child. And that is a dimension of grief that no one should have to go through, but people do have to go through. And sometimes I don't think you realize how powerful your love is until it doesn't have anywhere to go. And there's arguably no love stronger than the love of a parent for a child. And it just felt like such a privilege to read this book. Jessica's memoir really is so powerful. And to be able to chat with her about it, I just really enjoyed the conversation. And she also, in the midst of it was one of the like nicest compliments I've received in interview. There have been some guests that have just been so, so lovely and complimentary, which is always like, I just never know how to react or respond because I'm like, this isn't about me, it's about you. But it always feels nice to be complimented. But I really did love, at one point she said, in all the interviews I've done about this book, no one has asked me that question. And I was like, yes, did it. That's what every interviewer wants to hear, right? It's like, oh, yeah. And not that it's like a completely random question and therefore that's why they haven't been asked it, but that it's like, no, it's an important question and one that hasn't been posed before. I was like, I cracked the code. That's right. Things I did that. So thank you, Jessica, for gifting me that compliment. It certainly feels really good, and I go back to it when I'm doubting my interviewer skills. But also thank you for this beautiful memoir and the conversation. Next episode was with my dear friend Trinity Stuckey, and this episode is like kind of the epitome of why I love making meaning. Trinity has deep conviction and religious faith in her Christianity, and it's really a beautiful, beautiful conviction. And I say that as someone who has a vastly different relationship to religion and to Christianity. And it's conversations like this that I think really exercise my ability to see things beyond my experience and see the beauty in the vastness of the human experience across the board. Trinity shared how she stopped going to church because she realized that she was walking into the house of God, not really thinking about it, not really stepping into the awareness of the God state. And she had a problem with that when she realized. And so she made a vow to herself and to God to not step foot back into a church until she got right. And boy, is that not how everyone, at least I would like to think, how anyone who has a strict religion and consistent ritual behavior in relationship to their religion should be thinking about those things, right? With intentionality. And as soon as Trinity realized, like, oh, something's up, she stopped. And she was like, we got to figure this out and then we'll move forward. And it wasn't that she stopped practicing her faith. It wasn't that she turned away from God. It actually allowed her to turn into her faith and into the parts of her religion and her relationship to God that brought her the most meaning and love and purpose. And then she was able to slowly start going back to church with this newfound state of alignment with what she wanted to believe, to make herself a better person, because she felt more aligned with the way she was practicing her religion. And it's just such a powerful story, especially for me as someone who has been hurt by a lot of people in the Christian church and has had some really hard experiences with Christianity. To hear someone have a relationship with their faith, returning to Christianity, be so similar to my story, being one of turning away from Christianity, and yet they seem to have a real similar arc, is just like mind-blowingly beautiful to me. I think it's evidence that we are using different language to talk about the same thing, right? And I never want to project my understanding of someone's religion onto them. That is absolutely not my place to do. So I would never want to presume that Trinity would feel the same way about that. However, as our friendship has bloomed and developed, it has really allowed me to see the ways in which our values are so similar, and how religion is just a manifestation of our humanity. And just like anything, it can be maligned and manipulated into something hurtful and harmful. But everything can. And it's unfortunate that I was hurt and harmed by this one segment of religion. But it's also beautiful that Trinity has found beauty and a path to loving herself and others through that. Like, all of those things can be true at the same time. And I think that that's That's really cool. And I'm really thankful for my friendship that has blossomed with Trinity. It's something I'm really, really grateful for. So thank you, Trinity, for this episode and for your friendship. The next episode is maybe one of my favorite episodes of the podcast. Anyone who has a podcast, which who doesn't now, will know that there are some conversations that you're having where you just click in and you are like in it with that person. And it is just this special kind of magic. This episode with Manda Scott, absolutely, like, we got there and we were in the thick of it. And oh, that feeling is just like what I want to chase when you are having a conversation with someone and it feels like your brain is about to break, but instead of breaking, it like clicks into this like Rube Goldberg machine that's like 1 inch away from completely falling apart, but it doesn't, and it creates something weird and magical through your conversation with this other person, and then some beautiful truth arises through watching the chaos of the machinery unfold. Oh, I loved this episode. Not only did I just personally love this episode, I also thought that it was so cool that we talked about narrative fiction storytelling. I interview a lot of authors on the show, and Manda is the first and only so far author of a fiction book that I have had on. And as someone who writes fiction, but also grew up acting and performing, like, fiction art is very much something that I enjoy. And I think oftentimes gets at truth more so than nonfiction and quote unquote truisms can, right? Like, self-help books are not all the time, but sometimes great. There's still something different between reading a self-help book and reading The Picture of Dorian Gray, right? It's like that book has done so much for me personally that a self-help book couldn't. Not that the self-help book doesn't offer something equally as beneficial, but we need both of these things. And I think it's deeply fascinating that in telling, air quotes here, false story gets at something deeply true about the human experience. Like, that's what my favorite pieces of media do. And I think that's what we can see in all sorts of stuff. It's why we're obsessed with, it's why we're obsessed with Severance or Stranger Things or, you know, improv comedy, any spectrum of media that is just deeply telling a story. It's like, what do I have behind me? Walt Whitman. All truths await in all things. And I think that there are certain truths that await in fiction that are magical. I also loved that in this conversation, we talked about our duty to the fellow human being, to the world around us, our part in the web of life, the nature of consciousness. And I think it draws a really important parallel between self-definition and understanding kind of a philosophical conception of life into social justice and justice work. That relationship is something I'm really passionate about, and something Manda and I have been fortunate enough that we have been able to continue that conversation outside of the podcast. So good episode. Thank you, Manda. Then I was able to talk to Cynthia Jers. I look down at my notes and I see the name of the next guest and I get excited because I'm like, oh my gosh, that was such a good episode. But it's like, I feel that way about all of them, right? Obviously I'm biased, but in this episode, Cynthia is an author as well. Her book will be linked down below, of Summoned by the Earth. And I learned so much in this conversation, not just about the spiritual aspect of our relationship to Earth and Earth consciousness, but the way that activism is deeply tied to philosophy and religion for Cynthia. She is a student of Thich Nhat Hanh, and listening to her talk about working in community, like actually foot on the ground activism in a way that was grounded and rooted in spirituality was so beautiful to me. I think when we think about activism, we think about protests, right? Which are a very important, useful thing. You think about people throwing paint on a painting or, you know, rallying in the streets, chaining themselves to a tree, all of these things. And yes, there is absolutely a place for righteous indignation in activist work. I think this other dimension of spiritual alignment in activist work is something that doesn't get talked about enough. And I just found it so powerful. Like, there's a reason why we all have this inclination towards seeking more. And to take that Calvinistic sensus divinitatis and rooting that back into this reality and how we can make the world a better, more inhabitable place for our fellow beings, to me, that's magic. It's like, that is a magic trick that I can kind of see how you're doing it, but I don't quite know all the steps yet, but I'm learning and I want to continue watching you do it so that hopefully I can learn how to do it better and better. And one day I can perform the magic trick too. So, good conversation. My next conversation was with Hilary Giovale, and this episode also had to do with activism. And I think that's probably the second most common theme in this season was like climate activism, but also how that relates to our relationship to other people and indigenous populations that do have this relationship to the earth that settler colonialism seems to have divorced us from. And in Hilary Giovale's work, the thing that I was so floored by was her acknowledgement of her status as a straight white woman entering into these spaces and wanting to do this work. It's something that I continually question and doubt and worry about, is that when I do anything, say anything, I'm trying to be inclusive and careful with my language, that I am going to falter and fail and offend and harm. And of course I will. I will. We all will. You know, you can't do this perfectly. And there's no perfect activist and there's no perfect activism, right? The same way there's no perfect victim. It doesn't mean that that harm didn't still befall that victim and that that harm was bad. Same thing with activism. Like, there's no perfect activist and no perfect activism. It doesn't mean that the goals that they're trying to reach and the good that they're trying to do is bad just because there's this one flaw in it. But I have a lot of fear in falling short and in not doing activism appropriately. And it prevents me from doing more. And that's a problem. I think that's a bigger societal conversation we need to have around, like, having grace for people so that there is a safety in trying your best when you are doing this work. If you are coming from a place of love and inclusivity and effort and really educating yourself beforehand and really trying to do your best, then we need to have a space that supports that even when we do inevitably fall short. And I'm not trying to say that this means, you know, don't call anyone out just because they're, you know, they say they're a feminist, so therefore they can do no wrong. Absolutely not. I am saying it's a nuanced thing, and I want to see us be able to have a more nuanced conversation around these things. I always go back to that, right? In every dimension, we need to be able to hold, we need to be able to hold our feelings and each other. And my words are failing me around this, but I hope that you can feel the heart behind what I am trying to say. That is, we need to create safety for people to fall short in their activism in order to encourage more activism. And we need to create safety for questioning and curiosity on all ends of the spectrum. We need to hold complexity and nuance with this conversation. I'm such a broken record with that, but it's so true. Like, we need to break down these dichotomies. The thing that I'm really thinking about is, like, I'll give you an example to try and illustrate my point. For me, an issue that I'm really passionate about is feminism. And I could imagine a scenario wherein someone asks me a question like, well, what about sex work? Isn't that counterproductive to the feminist project? Isn't that actually just objectifying yourself? And isn't that bad for women? And me getting upset and angry about that question and saying, you can't question, you know, what a woman is doing. That's counterproductive to the project of feminism. And, you know, I have these conclusions for this reason, and that's why this is true. And you can't ask that question. And actually, that's shutting down the curiosity, right? Not to say that questioning should be allowed all the time, and in every scenario, there needs to be safe spaces and good times to do this. Like when, like if your friend gets in an argument out in public, it's like, hey, I got your back. I'm on your team. I'm going to defend you, even if I think you're wrong, because you're my friend. I got you. As soon as we get in the car and we're headed home, we may have a different conversation. But in the moment, I'm going to defend you and have your back, because that's what friends do. It feels similar in the sense that, like, there are certain times that, you know, questioning is not appropriate. Questioning your friend is not appropriate, and you do just need to defend. There are times and places for that, when done so with intention and careful eye towards consequences. There is also absolutely a need for that conversation in the car afterwards. And within the example of this friendship, it's in private with your friend, right? Because you don't want to embarrass them or make them feel bad, but you do want to help them. In the work of social justice, I think oftentimes that conversation in the car needs to happen publicly too, to illustrate the very work that we are trying to do. And that's hard because it's vulnerable, but it's necessary for creating spaces for questioning and curiosity, because that's how learning happens. You need safety in order to learn. And if someone doesn't feel like they have the safety in order to learn, we've already lost them. Someone needs to feel safe coming to me and saying, I don't understand sex work. That seems counterintuitive to feminism to me, so that we can sit there and have a conversation about it. And so that hopefully they can learn something from my perspective about how there is power in reclaiming something. And, you know, there's different psychological considerations that go into this, but also that I can listen to them and hear their side of the story and understand more around why they're worried about this thing and how it may be counterproductive to the movement, so that we can all get to a place of being as empowered and protected as possible. I used sex work in that example because it is a really complicated issue. And I want to be clear that that is something that I am in support of. I do think that sex work is real work, and I think we need to enhance protections of sex workers as well. But again, I think that it is a longer conversation. There are a lot of things that go into the nuances of sex work and how it can be empowering and productive and beneficial, and ways that it can feel unempowering. And there are a lot of horror stories that you hear about the sex work industry of women still being abused and harmed within it too. So again, even in using that example, I just want to be clear that it's all nuanced. Everything is nuanced. Everything is complex. Gosh, okay, it's true. But moving on to the next episode, thank you, Hillary, for bringing light to the importance of this complexity and my fears as an activist wanting to say the right things, do the right things, and how we want to create a space for people to be able to fall short and fail, but still try. still try and do this work of activism because we need more people. We need more people. Next episode is Calvin Blackman, who is another life coaching friend. And what a lovely conversation this was as well. There is something in, you know, I primarily have women guests on, and I always love shaking it up and hearing from men too. Of course, it's important. It's part of everything. We all make meaning. And I really loved the way that Calvin related his experience with coaching to this transition to life coaching and his honesty with how life coaching has improved and helped his life. You know, it really reminded me of Sneha's story where her coming into her own healing of her own body made her realize that she wanted to pursue helping other people heal. And when you kind of unlock some secret for yourself, it kind of ignites this fire of wanting to help other people unlock those secrets too. And I think Calvin's story shows us just that. And I think that that's really beautiful. Thank you, Calvin, for being a part of this episode. The next episode was with Dennis Carlson, and y'all know Dennis now. He is now my co-host on Bow Down, another podcast that the Cohere Collective has recently come out with. If you haven't listened to it yet, please do. It is out wherever your pods are cast and on the Cohere Collective's YouTube channel, and there are clips all over social media. And this was the first time Dennis and I had an extended conversation over the mic. And at this point, we had already kind of decided that we wanted to do some sort of project together. And the thing about Dennis that I was just so struck by was his passion for helping women. It is something that you do not see in men. You just don't. Like, even men who are extremely passionate about social justice or economic justice, environmental justice, whatever that looks like, it's rare that feminism or just like women's rights is something that is their one that they kind of cling to. I think we all tend to gravitate towards one kind of avenue to do justice work that just tends to resonate the most. And I think we see a lot of men advocating in other avenues. And largely, I think it's understandable because they just don't understand the woman's experience. I think also there's this other added layer, similar to what we were talking about with Hillary's episode, of not wanting to misspeak, not wanting to overstep, not wanting to be counterproductive or harmful to the movement. So it's like, well, I'll just do work somewhere else. And when Dennis first told me he was really passionate about that specifically, and that he wanted to do that, but that he wanted to do it with a woman. He wanted to talk about this work and empowering women with a woman. I just had so much respect for that because it was very much similar to how Hillary really invites in voices of indigenous people, people of color, and people that are experiencing the things that she's talking about firsthand, so that you really get that firsthand account, not just filtered through her point of view. It's similar to Dennis being like, I don't want to just have a podcast where I talk about feminism. Like, I'm a guy. I don't want to just do this. Like, it needs to be grounded in the work. And even as we built the podcast Bow Down, he said, I want our dynamic to be reflective of the dynamic that we're creating in the world. I want you to call the shots. And he was like, of course, it is a part of your company too. So let me know, like, what do you need from me? Tell me. Don't be afraid to think of me as second in command, because I am. And it was just so empowering for me to not, for the fear to be removed in that way. And that was a really beautiful gift that Dennis gave to me. And now we have Bow Down, and it's an awesome, awesome thing that I'm really proud of and that I think you'll enjoy if you're passionate about feminism or spirituality. you should absolutely check it out. We have talked a little bit about the feminism in Severance, the relationship of capitalism to feminism, biblical womanhood, the mythological roots of feminism and empowering women, you know, Lilith, Hecate, these different deities. Like, we go all over the place, but it all comes back to the beautiful divine feminine. And it's really cool conversations we're having, I think. So I would love if you checked it out. And Dennis, thank you for being my co-host, my partner in Bow Down, and a part of Making Meaning. My next episode was with Dr. Adam Dorsey, and this was also such a beautiful episode, and one that I think got hyper-specific and hyper-focused on one area of coherence in a way that I think is so important to do. I tend to have a problem with wanting to make sure that everything I create in relationship to Cohere is hyper-zoomed out and includes everything, which is impossible. And so sometimes I get stuck in the analysis paralysis of like, okay, how far down the rabbit hole do I want to go versus where do I need to cut it off and how wide do I want to go? And it just gets to be too much, right? So to have Dr. Adam's work in connection be the sole thing, it was so helpful to me to be able to have this conversation, to really drill down into specificity. And I think the conversation we had is also really important. Like, connection is, you know, earlier we were talking about how grief is fundamental to the human experience because of its relationship to change. And I think that we also have to say that connection is one of those things that's fundamental to the human experience. We are intimately connected to everyone around us, to everything around us. And we must understand that connection in order to do justice to the people we love in our lives, to our broader communities, and to ourselves. And Dr. Adam's work spanning across a connection to the self, to a higher power, to community, to family, I think really creates space for understanding this important facet of experience. So, Dr. Adam Dorsey, thank you for being a part of Making Meaning and sharing your work. His book will also be linked down below. He also has a few TED Talks. Depending on the space that I have in the show notes and descriptions, I'll try and link everything as much as I can down there. But again, if you're curious about any of these specific episodes, please go check those out, and way more resources will be in those show notes and descriptions specifically. Next, I talked to Kathy Taylor, and what a cool full circle moment for me, y'all. I always love talking to people that are like mentors that I had in my life. And the last time I had talked to Kathy was a few years ago, like before I really started really doing stuff with Cohere. Like it was a little baby seed that had been planted, but there was no sort of sprout. And to be able to chat with her, and similar to how we were talking about a sibling being kind of a benchmark, other people can kind of serve as that benchmark in a way too. That's like, oh, this is a person I knew at this point in my life. In the same way, when you go home, you're kind of thrust back to how you felt in middle school because it's like, oh my gosh, I'm back in my childhood home. Same here, where it's like when you interact with someone that was so prevalent in one time in your life that maybe isn't anymore, that it kind of makes you go back to that time and you're like, whoa, I really have changed. I really have grown. I really have evolved. And so it was so cool for me to feel that experience, and such a gift that Kathy gave me by sharing this conversation with me. Her work is also so freaking cool. She does equine therapy, embodiment work, nervous system regulation, somatic therapy, just all of the awesome stuff that is the bridge between science and spirituality. And I do think that the nervous system is kind of this interesting epicenter of the connection between the physical and the non-physical. And that's exactly where Kathy's work lies. She says that she calls her work the practical woo. And I do want to note that, like, there is a lot of discourse around, like, is it woo-woo or is it actually an indigenous practice of communities and people of color? And we've kind of stolen these practices. So we need to be mindful of that in the language we're using. But I think that the heart of what she is trying to say there is there's a way to make these things that seem like wildly, ridiculously magical. That's like, there's no way that that's actually grounded in anything, but she's able to ground it. She's able to kind of show you how it works and why moving your body in a certain way is going to make you feel differently. And it's just fascinating. And in the episode, she takes me through an exercise of this embodiment. So if you're curious about how she does this work or kind of what it is that I'm talking about, go watch it on YouTube. Of course, you can listen to it as well, but there are some, because it's embodied, I think watching this one is really helpful. Yeah. So thank you, Kathy, for sharing your wisdom, for being a checkpoint for me, and being such a great mentor to me as well. Then I talked to Tamar Hurwitz-Fleming all about birthdays, and another example of the beautiful connection between something super practical that we all know and love and the spiritual. I had never thought of birthdays as a spiritual thing before, but they so are. And as someone who, like, loves a new moon, full moon ritual, the fact that I hadn't thought about birthdays as hyper-spiritual is wild. But it's like, think about all the traditions. We make a wish on a candle. We bring presents and gifts and honor someone. We have a celebration. You know, you have a day dedicated to your rebirth, to the cycle of you. Like, all of these things are just deeply imbued with magic. And I think that the fact that so many of us get birthday blues around it too is also invites in this curiosity around self-love and the importance of that work. I think that this conversation really stands on its own too. There's a lot there to explore. And there's also a workbook that Tamar has in conjunction with the actual book. And I always love when authors include exercises, workbooks, practical things that we can do to put the things that they're saying into practice. And that's kind of the heart of this, is how can you make your birthday work for you and be something that lifts you up? Thank you, Tamar, for being a part of this episode and for sharing her pups with us. If you are a dog lover like I am, you also get a sneak peek of some of Tamar's precious, adorable dogs in the episode. So that was a nice surprise too. The next episode, I welcomed back Leah Rampe, but this time with her co-author of an all-new book, Discovering the Spiritual Wisdom of Trees. Her co-author is Beth Norcross. And what a cool conversation this was. Doing a dual interview is always a difficult challenge for an interviewer because you kind of get sucked into a conversation with one person, but you want to be mindful of, like, not completely leaving someone else out of that. But also, like, you want them to be able to feed off of each other as well and not have to feel like they only need to bounce through you. But I think the fact that they had written a whole book together really lended itself to being able to be interviewed together really beautifully too. Not only is their work around the spiritual wisdom of trees deeply fascinating, again, in this intersection of something really deeply physically felt and practical to something extremely non-physical and spiritual, the book is really beautiful too. And it's just a good reminder, again, of the spirituality that is all around us. And when I say spirituality, I want to be clear that I mean, maybe I should start saying, like, the mystery of life, because I think spirituality does kind of close off some ears for people, and I don't intend it to. I really try and use spirituality to be as non-specific as possible so that anyone can kind of map a worldview onto it. So, yeah, that's what I mean when I say spirituality, but maybe I'll start shifting my language on that because I want it to be something that feels accessible and there is this wisdom from trees that is about the mystery of life. That is the thing that Beth and Leah are talking about. And for me, it does feel spiritual. For them, it clearly does feel spiritual, but that may not be the right word for everyone for that experience. My last episode of this season was with Mike and Paige Brown, who, yes, indeed, are my parents. And I was not expecting the direction that this conversation went in, but I loved it. And I love my parents. Like, I hope that that's so clear in the episode that, one, how fucking lucky I got. Like, it makes me emotional to think about. But the fact that I would choose my parents in every lifetime, because not only have they given me so much and truly are my biggest supporters, but because they're people that I want to be friends with, you know, it's like as an adult, even if they weren't my parents, I would want them to be in my life because they're good people. They care deeply. They try so hard and want to make the world a better place and think deeply about things. And to have parents that, sure, are infallible, sure, fucked me up in plenty of ways, as any parent does, never once made me question their belief in me. There aren't words to describe that gift, and I hope that you have that feeling too, because you deserve it. Everyone deserves to feel that way, and not enough people do. And it is nothing short of a miracle that I got the parents I did. And I hope that that is so clear in this episode, just the love we have for each other. And I also want to be clear that we really fought for that love. We fought for that relationship because it wasn't always easy. You know, as you grow up and you realize your parents aren't these perfect, infallible gods, they're real human beings that can mess up and make mistakes, it gets hard. It gets really hard. And then you become an adult with your own thoughts and opinions and start processing through the things that happened in your childhood, and stuff comes up that you gotta work through, that you gotta talk through, that you have to be intentional about how you build an adult working relationship with your parents. And the fact that I got parents that wanted to do that work with me, alongside me, for me, even though it asked them to do the hardest thing, which is to think about the ways that you mess up. They were willing to do that and go there because of how much they love me, and they're still willing to continue having this conversation and to come on to a podcast to talk about it vulnerably on the internet. Like, words just can't describe how grateful I am. And I really wanted to do something special for the season finale, and I hope that it feels as special to you as it does to me. I know that it actually can't, because it's like, well, they're my parents and it's my family. But I hope at least you can sense how special this episode is to me and how special my parents are to me. I mean, again, kind of going back to Dr. Adam Dorsey, connection is everything. And the connection we have with our parents is the very first connection that we have beyond our connection to ourself. And it teaches us how to love, how to understand who we are. Like, before individuation, we view ourselves as a part of our parents. So actually, that's not true. We are connected to our parents before we're connected to ourselves. And how damn lucky that those two are the ones that I was connected to. To kind of close out this overview of season 3, I want to continue on this path of gratitude. Thank you for being here, for listening. This is what I love doing. This is everything to me, having these conversations, because they make me better, but I also deeply believe that they make the world better. I think that with any art, once it's out of my hands, once it's out of the creator's hands and in the hands, ears, eyes of the audience, it becomes something new and beautiful in its own way. And yes, I love having these conversations off mic with people. There is something additionally artfully, creatively beautiful about sending them out into the public and seeing the energy that comes out of that, that comes out of response and listening and acceptance and viewership and community and conversation that arises around it. And that is because of you. I want to be so clear that I am not the creator of this. We are the creators of what making meaning is. We are also doing the thing while we talk about the thing. When you are listening to Making Meaning, you are actively making meaning while listening to how people make meaning. And I am learning from you in doing that. Always. So thank you for being my co-creator. Thank you for being my collaborator in this divine space. Thank you for being a part of my meaning. And thank you for the deepest privilege and honor of letting my voice be a small part of how you make meaning too. That is the greatest gift that anyone who has listened to my voice for any amount of time, even if it was 3 seconds because you clicked on the wrong video and then you clicked away. Thank you. That is so precious. And it is not lost on me how important your attention is. And those 3 seconds, though they may be only 3 seconds, I deeply believe gives rise to new meaning. This is it for season 3, y'all. We're gonna pick back up these conversations about the big questions of life in season 4. I will announce once we have the premiere date across social media. If it is already decided by the time this comes out, it will be in the video description, episode show notes down below. Please subscribe so that you do not miss the season 4 premiere. In the meantime, there is so much content out there for you to explore and discover. This year alone, we have launched 3 more podcasts. One is called Our Daily Ritual, and it's a daily ritual, secular kind of devotional, an intellectual's devotional, if you will, that's scaffolding for a daily practice to allow you to kind of build your purpose and coherence around in an intentional little moment every day for you to hopefully practice coherence in your daily life, to make it real and tangible and accessible. Like I mentioned in the episode, there is also Bow Down, which is the podcast about esoteric and empowered feminism that I do with Dennis that comes out every Friday. And I have a new podcast with one of my dear friends, Lauren, called The Unwritten Aesthetic, which explores the intersection of creativity and philosophy. And that comes out every other Tuesday. So that will be every other Tuesday flipped with Making Meaning once Making Meaning comes back for season 4. So every Tuesday now, there will be an episode of something out there. Just some weeks it'll be Making Meaning, some it'll be The Unwritten Aesthetic. And the first episode of that premieres Tuesday, April 29th. So I believe the first episode will be out once this goes out. So go check it out. It's really cool. Lauren's so smart and such a talented artist. You're gonna love it. And Bow Down is so fun. And if you're passionate about feminism or you're trying to work on stepping into your personal power, it's a great space to do that, learn about those things. And if you just want a little more of my face, or my voice, or a little bit more coherence, Our Daily Ritual is there almost every single day. Of course, if you're interested in working with me one-on-one to find and pursue your purpose, design your life with coherence, Life coaching offerings are available. You can find those on our website, thecoherecollective.com. And I think that's all I have. I think that's all I have for you here at the end of this episode. Thank you again. I can't thank you enough. I will always say it and keep saying it. And as always, I hope you feel like you are living more coherently. Until next time, love.